Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
From New York City, this is Lexicon Valley, a podcast about language. I'm John McWhorter. I teach linguistics at Columbia University. My latest books are Words on the Move and Talking Back, Talking Black. But my latest favorite project is doing these podcasts. And this week, let's delve into something which, frankly, it seems like we just have to do, given the times that we live in, for so many reasons. Let's talk about Hamilton. I mean, Hamilton the musical. Our episode today will include and be dominated by an interview with Neil Whitman, linguistics blogger extraordinaire, who's been listening to the cast album with a linguist's ear. We will meet him soon. And the way we're going to approach this is with something that Hamilton actually can teach us more about than it could seem. Those words, usually little, that seem to not mean anything. Well, horses run faster. What did well mean? If you think about it, the well implies that you're listening to what somebody else said, but you're gently contradicting it. So, well, horses run faster, as in you're talking about how fast cheetahs are, when technically horses, frankly, I don't know which one of those animals runs faster, but you take my point. Or, so that's what happened. What's the so? It's not just a hiccup, as people often thought. What does the so mean? I'll leave you to think about the fact that it has a meaning. There's a reason that you say so. You don't just say it because you don't know what you're about to say. It's there. Or, this is from the New York Times just a few days ago. It's that wonderful feature, New York Today, where you learn what the weather is going to be right after you wake up, or at least that's how I use it. So, the wind will make it feel as nippy as the teens as you head to work. But hey, at least the sun will stay out. Catch it if you can. What's that little but hey, if you think about it? Well, hey means, hey, there's a raccoon in the trash can. And that is one thing that hey can mean. But if it's the wind will make it feel as nippy as the teens as you head to work, but hey, at least the sun will stay out. That's not, hey, the sun's out. That's not the point. That but hey means something else. It's things like that. It's things like the well, the so, the hey in this but hey construction. These things where it'd be highly elusive to explain to a foreigner what these things meant. They seem to even stretch the boundaries of what we consider meaning to be. And yet if you don't use these little words, you're not really speaking the language. It makes you Siri or a profoundly unusual human being. These things are called, according to some linguistics traditions, discourse particles. Another sentence with the hey. It's about this new thing with dinosaurs, where the two different clans of dinosaurs have been reassorted. This is from the Tetrapod Zoology blog, Darren Nash's wonderful blog. I recommend it to everybody, even if you're not interested in tetrapods and dinosaurs. He said recently, "It has something of a theropod feel about it. Hey, maybe this is now totally okay and actually correct. Once again, it's not, hey, I am amazed that." What that hey means, and so does the but hey, that means that something has a downside, but there's actually an upside. And so the wind will make it feel as nippy as the teens as you head to work. That's no good. But hey, at least the sun will stay out. There's that upside. So whenever you say but hey, what you mean is I acknowledge that something had a downside, but there's actually an upside. You don't think of it, but that's the nature of language. One other thing about hey, just to give you a sense of how elusive and yet how interesting these meanings can be. Hey is always shifting around in American English. And so, for example, if you read Fitzgerald, you notice that hey actually meant, in many cases, what huh means today. So this is 1920. Fitzgerald has a short story, May Day. Here's a sequence from it.
Peter turned to Dean. "Beautiful morning," he said gravely, squinting up his owlish eyes. "Probably is. Go get some breakfast, eh?" Dean agreed, with additions. "Breakfast and liquor."
So, go get some breakfast, hey? If you notice, nobody would say that today. It's, go get some breakfast, huh? Not go get some breakfast, hey? Or 1912, further back, a luckless Santa Claus. A trampish character says, trying to kid me, hey? Today it would be, trying to kid me, huh? Not, hey. Here is, finally, an actual clip of somebody using hey in a way that you would never hear today. This is from Lucille Ball's hit radio sitcom right before she basically saw her life turn around with the I Love Lucy television show. It's called My Favorite Husband. All of it still exists. It's all online. And for those of you who have seen each I Love Lucy episode 50 times and have had enough of that, you can listen to proto I Love Lucy, almost as entertaining, on the radio in the late 40s and early 50s. Listen to this little sequence from one episode of My Favorite Husband in 1948.
I happen to be talking on this line.
I don't hear anyone talking on the other end.
Of course not. The doctor's just listening. I'm being psychoanalyzed, hey.
Now I've heard everything. She's being psychoanalyzed, hey. This I gotta hear.
And every night I dream about Joe DiMaggio, doctor. I dream he picks me up and swings me around. What does that mean? Joe DiMaggio picks me up and swings me around.
It means you look like an old bat.
Bessie Budinsky is back again. Bud out, you. Now, let's see, doctor. What else was there to tell you?
Oh, yeah, doctor. I meant to tell you I won't be able to pay you anymore, hey.
Hey! Hey, I didn't say that. Doctor! Dr. Lassvogel! Hung up.
I've never heard a real live person use hey that way, and of course, the Lucy people were trying to be funny, but one wonders. It's certainly possible. The Hamilton part is coming, believe me, and some of you may know why. I am now going to make brief mention of another discourse particle, yo. We're most familiar with it in Black English with, hey, them pants was tight, yo, or something like that. But, you know, it's interesting. These markers are always changing. Any human speech variety is dynamic. And it's interesting because I've learned from Neil Whitman just this week that yo has developed a completely unexpected meaning in Black English in at least one place in the United States. And so Neil Whitman authors one of my favorite linguistics blogs. It's called Literal Minded. Neil has a gift for taking a look at linguistics topics that are actually going to be interesting to other people and making them interesting to other people. Neil, you're particularly good at not being too short, but not being too long. There's never a dip in the tension in one of your entries. I highly recommend Literal Minded. Neil, what's going on in Baltimore with yo, of all things?
First, thanks for your introduction. You're too kind. I think you're referring to the research of Margaret Troyer, a former Baltimore area teacher, and she found that yo is being used as a gender-neutral third-person pronoun, much like many of the rest of us are now using they or them.
So how would they use this pronoun?
So when she would do a test showing kids a picture of cartoon characters of ambiguous gender, Troyer found the kids used yo instead of he or she. So, for example, they said things like, yo put his foot on the desk. And it says they also used yo as a substitute even when they did not know the gender, quoting from this code switch write-up.
And so English changes, as always, and in ways you might not even expect. And so a discourse particle becomes a pronoun. Okay, so we've looked at hey and we've looked at yo. And so that is a transition into Neil, Hamilton, Lexicon Valley. Discourse particles. What is the connection between all these things? What's going on with discourse particles in Hamilton?
It all started last year when I bought the cast recording of Hamilton for my wife, but pretty soon it showed up in all of our mobile devices, and the CD itself spent some time in the car for the next few months.
CD?
We listened to it a lot, yeah. So one of the songs on there near the beginning is My Shot. Perhaps you've heard it.
Give me your position. Show me where the ammunition is.
Nobody's heard that one. Yeah, that's a wonderful song.
Yeah, it's where Hamilton explains his desire that will shape the rest of the story. And the chorus goes like this.
So it's the hey yo in there that pricked up your ears.
Well, actually, the first time I listened to it, what pricked up my ears was his rhyming of hungry with country, which is rather daring, I thought. But by the end of the song, I was also noticing that, you know, that line didn't begin with, I'm just like my country. It was, hey, yo, I'm just like my country.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that way every single time the chorus came around. Just for some variation, he might have said, yeah, I'm just like my country. But every time, no, it was just, hey, yo. And I started to wonder if maybe hey and yo were fusing together and sort of becoming a single word here, as words do, as you've noted on this very program.
Right.
And certainly, of course, hey is still its own word. They use it on its own quite a bit in the rest of the play.
1780, old winter's ball, and the Schuyler sisters are the envy of all. Yo, if you could marry a sister, you rich son.
Is it a question of if, Burr, or which one?
Hey,
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 hey, hey, hey,
hey, hey,
hey, ooh, hey, I do what you do, I do, hey, 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 ooh, hey, I do what you do, I do.
And there's plenty of yo's on their own, five of them in a row just minutes earlier from the character of John Lawrence when he interrupts the conversation between Hamilton and Aaron Burr.
Yo, what time is it? Showtime!
Like I said.
Showtime, yo! I'm John Lawrence in the.
But the question is whether heyo in particular is becoming a thing. Because if it were just random, then you might think that, say, one chorus of that at one point on the album would be heyo, but then elsewhere, maybe people would shout something else, but they don't. As you show in the Yorktown sequence, for example, where you have hey yo in exactly the same place with the chorus singing it.
So what happens if we win?
I go back to France. I bring freedom to my people if I'm given the chance.
We'll be with you when you do.
Go, lead your man.
I'll see you on the other side.
Here we meet again.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot.
And so it isn't just something random that the actor playing Hamilton sticks in, or there's a little blank in the script or something like that. It's set. In your blog post, where you describe all this so well, and folks, it's very much worth a read, there's another hey yo that you show, Neil. Which one was that?
In between Yorktown and my shot earlier, we're introduced to General George Washington in the song Right Hand Man. He storms on the stage explaining, you know, how and what dire straits the Continental Army is. And this is where he convinces Hamilton that his talents would be better used as George Washington's personal assistant than as a soldier or even a commander.
Here he comes.
Here comes the general.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Here comes the general.
The moment you've been waiting for.
Here comes the general.
The pride of Mount Vernon.
Here comes the general.
George Washington. We are out.
There's that hey yo again.
Yeah, so I heard him say, hey yo, I'm going to need a right-hand man. As I was sitting in the passenger seat on a road trip looking through the liner notes, I immediately noticed that here, ayo really was spelled as one word. And in fact, it was spelled A-Y-O, no H, just ayo, one Y. So I said, okay, there it is. You know, it is definitely being perceived as one word, at least sometimes.
Right.
And then a few songs later in Yorktown, when they do the chorus to My Shot again, looking in the liner notes, you see that there it's no longer spelled hey, yo, it's spelled ayo, like in Right Hand Man. And that to me was the clincher, like, okay, that's it. Before I might have said, well, maybe there's some subtle difference between these two AOs that is just, you know, going over my head. But that was when I said, okay, no, we're definitely talking about the same word here, a piece of language that's not part of the standard language yet, so it's not subject to the pressures of spelling standardization.
And Neil, I think as linguist types, you and I see heyo being spelled something like ayo, where you lose a sound. And it makes us stand up and take notice. We feel like something is happening. That phonological reduction means something, doesn't it? It makes you start thinking about certain things happening.
Yeah, I mean, H is a phonologically weak sound anyway. I mean, it's always disappearing and reappearing. I mean, if you've taken Spanish, you've had to learn not to pronounce the H's at the beginning of words.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever had an argument about whether something is an historic occasion or a historic occasion, you get a sense of how H does this.
Mm-hmm.
People are putting it in, not putting it in. When they spell it, they're spelling it as they hear it,
mm-hmm.
and it hasn't settled into some sort of standardized spelling yet.
There's certainly that, and I find myself thinking actually about goodbye, of all things. And no, we are not at the end, but what I mean is that when you have that kind of reduction, it is very often a sign that the meaning is changing or a new meaning is conventionalizing. And so God be with you is originally what people are saying during leave taking. And then it becomes God be with you. God be with you. Goodbye, 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 and it becomes goodbye, which has a completely different meaning. When somebody waves bye or even says bye-bye, that has nothing to do with the good Lord accompanying you. And it's that phonological squidging together that's a sign that there's this new habit that's forming and the meaning is changing. What is this heyo? Where does it come from?
As for where it came from, I would sort of take the null hypothesis to be that, oh, well, it's simply the interjection hey followed by the interjection yo.
And it must have started that way, right?
Yeah, and then after that, well, you know, it just happened to be said together often enough, then it starts to be heard as one word and then can start to drift in its own directions.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering how many spelling variations there were, and I eventually mapped them all out in a chart, you know, and came up with 64 possibilities based on just a few spelling decisions I was thinking about to begin with. I started looking for all of them to see what meanings there were out there. I found 21 of them attested. Many of the entries were Urban Dictionary entries, which, of course, you always have to take with a grain of salt, but mostly they agreed with, you know, what I'd been seeing already about a greeting or just sort of a pay attention focusing device,
right.
A discourse particle that does that. But for hey-o, spelled hey-o,
right.
It says, something said after a conversational phrase that could be interpreted as a sexual reference is said. And then the sample conversation here they give is, John, dude, did you do the bio assignment? Mark, yes, that was so hard it kept me up all night. John, heyo, hashtag that's what she said. And this is by a user named A Texas Lone Star 21 back in 2009.
Actually, Neil, this is interesting because I think we can put these uses of heyo on a kind of timeline. I always want to know what was the process where we got from there to here. You know, Bugs Bunny starts as a little white rabbit who goes and gradually becomes the Bugs Bunny that we know. You mentioned heyo as a greeting, and it can be used as a greeting, and you might think in the most immediate sense that hey and yo put together would be a way of saying hi. And you can actually see it used that way in a show I'll bet a lot of us watch. I have seen every episode, love it to pieces. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, although I should say that there is a marked paucity of Philadelphia accents on the show. But It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is a show where the characters actually use heyo as a greeting regularly, as we can hear in, for example, this montage.
Bitches. Heyo! Heyo!
Heyo!
Heyo! What's up, bitches? What is up?
Heyo, it's Mac. What's up?
Heyo! What's up?
Heyo! What's up, bitches?
Heyo! What's up?
Heyo! Is that Charlie? Charlie's in the house. Charlie's in the house. Hey! Hey!
And then I find myself thinking of a little sequence in the movie Sister Act, where Kathy Najimy, playing that wonderful comic nun, at one point offers to help fix Whoopi Goldberg's habit with some scotch tape. And I forget exactly how it went because I haven't seen it since then. But she says, well, we can do it with a little bit of help from God and some scotch tape. And she pulls up some tape and she says, hello. I think analogously to that might be this this gay heyo, where the idea is you take something that's a greeting that's supposed to freshen things up. It's supposed to acknowledge that something has come into the room, someone, and you make it something that comes into the room by saying heyo. And among many things that you might say that heyo about, you might have scotch tape and also one of these erection jokes or something like that. Does that make sense to you?
You know, you mentioned the homosexual connection, and I noticed that as a little bit of semantic narrowing because, you know, the first definition
yes.
just said anything that could be interpreted as sexual.
Right.
But, for example, here's an Urban Dictionary. It says, Ayo, said after someone says something that may be considered gay or suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Another way of saying no homo. And then the little sample conversation, guy one. Man, I could sure go for a hot dog right now. I'm not sure where the craving came from. It just kind of came in my mouth. Guy two, ayo.
Maybe I don't get out much, but I've never heard anybody use it in these meetings.
Well,
have you?
So yeah, this is not an example in the wild yet. It's another Urban Dictionary definition. So that's when I started looking for various combinations of possible double entendres plus different spellings of heyo. So I was doing searches like, you know, so hard, heyo, get off, heyo.
Neil, we have really good jobs, don't we? Continue.
Oh, yeah, well, here we go. So being a hot gay guy is just so hard. Heyo, like women have no idea how easy they have it. And that's spelled hey hyphen yo. And then here's one just spelled H-E-Y-O. I suggest you all get off, heyo, this planet as soon as possible. Most excellent of all, I was telling my sons about this research I was doing, and then a couple of weeks ago, my older son, Doug, comes home and tells me about a conversation that he had with friend one and friend two for some class project he was doing where he had to interview somebody. So Doug said, yeah, I'm doing Mr. Smith, and friend one said something like, ha, 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 you're doing Mr. Smith, and friend two said, hey-o, that was the first spoken I'd heard of it, even
right.
though it was, you know, Doug's recounting of his friend's speech. But it illustrated something that also shows up in that Always Sunny in Philadelphia montage you played, the stress shift. So compound words, you know, very often they get the stress shifted onto the initial syllable. You did a whole episode on this. All the written examples, you can't really tell where the stress goes. And even hearing it in songs, you're not entirely sure because the meter of the song will sometimes distort how the word is pronounced. And so when I heard that, that was not only an example of this sexual innuendo caller outer heyo, but also a confirmation of the stress shift.
One thing that we should get in, we certainly can't miss the sexual part, but how does Ed McMahon fit into all of this? Because I suspect that he is a part of the puzzle.
So I have Ben Zimmer to thank for the McMahon connection here. Ben pointed out that when Johnny got off some sort of insult or zinger against the guest, Ed would jump in with, hi-o, not hey-o, but
I believe that Jeffrey Tambor's character on the wonderful Larry Sanders Show was doing a takeoff on this hi-o with the hey now that character would do. As a matter of fact. In any case, so that's how Ed McMahon fits in that I don't think there was anything sexual intended, but it was certainly a long way from just a greeting that you would come up with walking through a door. It meant something along the lines of something just happened that was viscerally compelling, and you could narrow that into it being about sex as well. And so, hey means one thing, yo means another. But it seems to me that it's a way of indicating sincerity along the lines of the fact that when we speak, we're always interested in showing that we really mean what we say. And we tend to sprinkle our spoken language with indications of that basic sincerity and commitment. So it seems that if you say, hey, yo, you're certainly not saying, hey, I've noticed something. When you say, yo, you're not saying, I'm trying to get your attention by pulling you by the collar. It's settled down into meaning something along the lines of, this is important, I really mean it.
Hey, yo, listen what I say. Yo. I got your hey, yo.
Well, Neil, this is absolutely fascinating. Frankly, I've listened to the Hamilton cast album, not as much as I would like because I have two small children myself, but I have listened to it quite a bit. And the last thing I was thinking about was discourse particles. I was just listening through the Hey-Yos, and I didn't think about the fact that there is in Hamilton, with everything else that's in it, science. I didn't know that there was a whole lot linguistically interesting about it. And yet you and I both know that we could go on. But thank you, Neil, for coming on. I'm glad you brought this up back in the fall, and I'm glad that we have actually been able to do it. Folks, Neil Whitman's blog is Literal Minded. I highly recommend it, not just this entry, but go backwards and you'll learn about all sorts of things. I would say that a couple of my shows have actually been sparked or influenced by Neil's blog work. Thank you so much, Neil.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Before we close, letters, I get letters. I am informed by somebody that I did not mention that with tomato and the way it was sometimes deformed into tomata in earlier American English and how tomato really was a deformation from Spanish tomate influenced by potato, that really the story begins with the Spanish taking tomate from an original Nahuatl, that's the indigenous language spoken in Mexico, which was threatened by Spanish entering. Originally, it was tomatl. Now, you can imagine being a Spaniard, you certainly don't want to say that, and so it's going to be something like tomate. So the deformation originally began with Spanish speakers. I didn't mention that before, partly because there are time limits and partly because I feel more comfortable criticizing speakers of my own language for screwing up other ones than jumping on Spaniards, but I'm sure that Spaniards will understand. And we do need to acknowledge indigenous languages in the Americas, especially since so very many of them are on the brink of extinction, and they were every bit as interesting, every bit as complex as languages that most of us are more familiar with. Also, on Hey, we heard Lucy and that other character actress saying, "So, I'm going to have to go tomorrow, Hey." Anybody who's listening who has had the benefit of a very long life, do you remember probably vernacular Northeasterners in the United States using hey in that way? Not, hey, there's a baseball game over on the other side of the fence. Not, where's the lamp? Hey, not that, but hey without that emphasis. So, we're going to go over and see the baboons, hey. Or, so, you're not interested in me anymore, hey. That little hey where it's down on the intonation contour in that way. Did people actually use hey that way, or is that just something that the writers of that radio episode were doing as kind of a joke? Because they do that in another My Favorite Husband episode too, and it makes the audience laugh. Was it real? I'd love to know. If you're probably 80 or older, did anybody talk that way? In any case, you can reach us at lexiconvalley@slate.com. That's lexiconvalley@slate.com. Follow us on Twitter @lexiconvalley. Steve Lickteig is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts, and Andy Bowers is the chief content officer of the Panoply Network. The show is edited by Mike Volo. I'm John McWhorter. Thank you so much for listening, and see you back here in 2 weeks. Hey-o, hey-o.